Welcome to another exciting episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the Brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The Brothers Anderson are... This is Eric.
And by the way, you know, when you're telling these little stories, here's a good idea. Have a point. It makes it so much more interesting for the listener.
This is Brother Jay.
You ask me if I have a God complex. Let me tell you something. I am God.
This is Drew.
There is a storm coming like nothing you have ever seen. And not a one of you is prepared for it.
And they are sometimes joined by guests like...
This is Dr. Wonders.
I had to stop her from screaming.
And Diane.
If you men only knew.
So sit back, close your eyes, and let us take you away. Unless you're driving, in which case keep your eyes open and watch the road and, you know, anyway. Welcome, this is Eric.
This is Drew.
And tonight we're going to talk about the 1987 classic RoboCop, directed by Paul Verhoeven. Evidently that's how you pronounce his name.
I've heard it Verhoeven, but yours is probably better.
According to IMDb, it's really Verhoeven, not Verhoeven, but it doesn't actually matter. He's Dutch, right? So we talk like Americans.
Of course we do.
So Paul Verhoeven, he's had a fantastic career.
Has he?
Well, he directed Basic Instinct and Total Recall and Hollow Man and Starship Troopers. And in a bold move, he actually personally attended, as the first director ever to do so, he publicly attended the 1995 Razzie Awards to accept, like, 7 awards for Showgirls.
That's pretty ballsy. I like it.
Oh, it's great. And he actually was quoted as saying that nobody expected him to be there. And everybody was laughing, but he actually came up 7 times to collect the worst director, worst movie, worst music, worst acting. And by the end of it, he's like, you know, he kind of laughed it off, and the people in the audience thought it was both classy and hilarious. And he said it was kind of, it was cathartic. It felt like the end of this negative spiral because he had to deal with all that crap from Showgirls. And he had, he was given the opportunity to direct Silence of the Lambs, and he was on some sort of like passion project with Arnold Schwarzenegger to do like a movie about the Crusades. But instead there was some sort of thing that happened. And instead he did like Cutthroat Island, and then somebody else put out kind of a Crusadesy movie. And so, that was the end of that. So that's one of his passion projects. And this movie, he made his bones with this movie. Between this and Showgirls, this and Basic Instinct, he was a mainstream Hollywood director.
Well, don't forget Total Recall.
Well, yeah. I think that was slightly later, though. But not much, I guess. But this movie won an Academy Award and was nominated for 2 others.
Oh, what did it win for?
It won a Special Achievement Award for Sound Effects Editing. And it was up for Best Sound and Best Film Editing. And I don't know how you felt about watching this movie recently for the show, but I, as it turns out, love this movie.
Yeah, it's funny. This movie fits into my favorite category of movies that we talk about for the podcast. The why did you take me to see this when I was 10 years old?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
But we saw this in the theater together, and I was 10. And I remember digging it pretty well. I mean, it freaked me out because it's, especially in the beginning, it is really bloody and violent. And, you know, I always really liked this movie. I thought it was fun. And so over the years, you know, I've watched it, you know, a few other times, mostly like when it's on TV, I'll watch part of it. But I can't remember the last time I actually like sat down and watched the whole thing beginning to end. And when I did that this week, this is a very different movie than I had in my head. Like, I knew all the beats, but putting it together and watching it like with an adult brain, there's a lot of great stuff in this movie. It's not just like a kind of throwaway popcorn action flick like I had categorized it in my mind from watching as a kid, there's some really smart stuff going on, some really deep satire and social commentary that's just kind of in the background. They don't beat you over the head with it. So I found it really fascinating watching it again.
Oh, me too. And it actually had me from the opening music. I'm going to have to put some of the music in here because on one hand, it feels so like 80s, like John Carpenter kind of synth music. But there really is some interesting stuff going on also.
The music is amazing. I mean, we... I guess in terms of like the movie-going experience now, this is a very familiar type of movie. I mean, it's a superhero origin story. And I didn't really think of it in those terms before. But it has like the... I guess I can't really call it an iconic theme because I don't know that I ever think about it out of context, but a very familiar and emotional provoking theme when you do hear it watching the movie, that the actual like RoboCop theme, it's like some combination of somewhere in between like the Superman theme or the Force theme or the Rocky theme kind of all put together, but it's like it's that big kind of score that goes along with the big moments of the movie that you don't really hear anymore, and it's repeated at all the important steps of the movie, and I really dug it. So I'm glad you mentioned the music.
Well, and you actually pointed out something that hadn't occurred to me, but it makes total sense, that, you know, we are spoiled because we've had some really good comic book movies lately. This is a comic book movie. It's just pure and simple. And it doesn't, unlike, say, I don't know, The Last Boy Scout, it doesn't have a lot of bloated stuff just shoved into it.
No.
The performances are a little cartoonish, but that's, you're supposed to have that. And yet, like, the violence when it happens is serious, so it doesn't let you forget that this is all fairly serious. There is peril. And it's funny because, you know, I was looking at reviews earlier today, and it talks about how this is like a cyberpunk movie, or it at the beginning of the plot summary in Wikipedia says, in a dystopian near future, Detroit, which is near bankruptcy and overrun with crime, gives Omni Consumer Products control of its struggling police force. Like, it may have seemed futuristic in 87, but it seems kind of reasonable now.
Yeah, that's just, you know, 8 Mile today.
Yeah, I mean, that's it's like all the serious weapon firepower. That's just the militarization of the police department that people are upset about. That's what happens when you have surplus tanks from the military industrial complex, which is, by the way, a subplot in this whole movie.
Yeah, and the commercials that they have in the news broadcasts, those are amazing. I mean, when I was 10, they just kind of seemed like funny throwaway little digressions or distractions. But they are like they reminded me of like the funniest satirical SNL ads. They were great.
Red alert. Red alert. Red alert.
You crossed my line of death.
You haven't dismantled your MX stockpile.
Pakistan is threatening my border.
That's it, Buster. No more military aid.
Nuke 'em. Get them before they get you. Another quality home game from Butler Brothers.
Absolutely. And the cast, oh my God, the cast is so rich. I mean, I actually put in my notes, motherfucking Rocket Romano.
Who's Rocket Romano?
Were you not into Grey's Anatomy?
No, I've never seen an episode.
Okay. Well, Paul McCrane, who plays Emil Antonowski, who has the best hair of the bad guys, and who ends up getting covered in toxic waste at the end.
He was on ER for a long time.
Oh, it was ER. It wasn't Grey's Anatomy. Sorry. He played Rocket Romano in ER.
Yeah. Oh, that was his name? I just remember he lost his arm.
Yeah, and after he lost his arm, spoiler, he gets killed in a helicopter crash. A helicopter lands on him and the blades cut him all to pieces. And he was like the bad guy. He was the, you know, the asshole. Really rich. And he also...
The dickish boss.
Yeah. 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 Really good, but a dick. Perfect surgeon character. Or, shout out to Connie, a perfect pilot character. But he also was in the TV show Fame, where he had like a red afro and played the guitar.
Is it okay if I call you mine? Just for a time. And I will be just fine if I know that you know that I'm wanting, needing your love. Oh, 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 oh.
I can't even picture him with a bunch of hair.
Oh, it's, yeah, it's amazing. He went, as he went bald, he took the crazy RoboCop hair, which I think was a bold choice. Fun. Again, it seemed like, you know, crazy, kind of Return of the Living Dead, kind of punk rock. But now none of it seems like out of bounds, you know? Lots of people got weird haircuts.
Sure. It's a rite of passage.
I love the fact that the goons are buffoonish. And yet, like, you know, they're bad guys. You don't forget that they're bad guys. But there's just enough of the T-Birds from Grease antics that make it fun.
Well, yeah, I mean, keeping it with the comic book theme, I mean, it's sort of like a Rose Gallery, or like if Boddicker was the Joker, you know, all of his goons would kind of have over-the-top personalities. That's, in my mind, that was sort of an analog for the group of villains in this movie.
Oh, yeah, and Boddicker, Kurtwood Smith, the president of the galaxy.
Also, Mr. Foreman.
Yes, Red.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic. He makes me smile when I see him on screen, especially when he's chewing scenery. And I like the fact that Nancy Allen of Dressed to Kill and Out of Sight. I love the fact that while she's the girl, she's not, it's not like a romantic role. They don't have to shove that in there.
No, I mean, that part could have easily been played by a man.
Yeah.
She was great in it, but there was no damsel in distress subplot, which was nice.
Exactly. And how about Bob Morton, Miguel Ferrer, back when he had some amount of hair? Great. But, I mean, Ronnie Cox and Dan O'Herlihy, Ray Wise. It's just a fantastic, fun cast, over-the-top characters. I'm sure they had a fun time doing it. Lots of practical special effects. I like that.
Yeah, I mean, all of the effects, I think they for the most part, they hold up pretty well. I mean, even like the Ed 209 kind of stop motion, it's kind of goofy, and maybe I like it because it provides me that sense of nostalgia. It really looks like Empire Strikes Back type special effects there. So
yes.
I don't know if somebody from a younger generation would have the same amount of affection for those types of special effects that I did watching it, but it enhanced the movie for me. It didn't take away from it.
Oh, not at all. And at the end, where you have what looks like a superpower rifle, but just actually these days looks like a Barrett 50 caliber sniper rifle with a little black box on the top of it at the end for their super guns. That's just fun.
Yeah.
And again, I mean, I guess we can go point by point through the plot, although I'm not sure that's super important, because it's a real, again, it's an, you're right, it's an origin story. So it's this guy who gets transferred into the worst part of Detroit. And the police is run by a private agency who doesn't really care about cops and their union. There's not enough cops and a lot of crime. And so Nancy Allen and Peter Weller, who we haven't even mentioned his name, play police officers who go to old Detroit. And they end up tailing a gang of bank robbers led by Clarence Boddicker, Kurtwood Smith. And they end up getting going to like, what is it? Some sort of like abandoned factory or something. And they get the drop on him.
Yeah.
And they blow him to crap with a shot, with several shotguns.
Oh, is more terrifying than that. You know, they have him captive on the ground, and Red blows off his hand at first, and then they just kind of watch and laugh at him as he is reacting to the trauma of having his hand shot off.
Yeah, and he's yeah, like in shock and crawling away.
Right, and then they just blast him full of holes, which is really jarring if you don't already know what the plot of the movie is, because he's set up to be the hero of the movie. You know, he's kind of got that swagger as he's walking around in his scenes, and then he's totally decimated in the like the first 20 minutes of the movie.
Well, yeah, and he's, I mean, unlike, say, I don't know, Steve Austin, who crashes as an astronaut and has to be put back together. I mean, this guy was basically murdered, and they salvage his parts to make RoboCop. After, by the way, we've already seen a demonstration from the OCP Corporation of what they really want to do, which is the ED-209 combat robot, who's got some software bugs to work out.
Oh, there's so much about this scene I love. It reminded me of when, way back when we talked about Creepshow, which I think was my very first episode. We talked about how the first story in Creepshow was about this rich family, and it was like this really over the top cartoonish version of a rich family. And I think the way I described it is, it's what poor people imagine rich people are like at their worst.
Yes.
And this opening scene in the OCP, I guess, is a boardroom. I don't know what it was. It was like a pitch meeting.
Yeah.
Where the head of the company was there, and like some of the division heads were there, and some lackeys were there. And it's like what people who think corporate America, who think that corporate America is like the worst part of our country, it's like how they imagine businesses are run, where you have the stately elderly white guy, you know, making all the decisions, and then all of his sycophantic division heads are just there sucking up to him. And my favorite, I mean, it was such a small role, but my favorite guy was Bob Morton's buddy, the black dude with the really big glasses.
Yes.
He was like the worst example of a yes man, where he's just there to smile and nod at whatever the head honcho says. And you know, he's just kind of doing that in the background, but it just adds to the scene. You know, and it's all, everybody in there is cutthroat. They're the only way to get ahead in corporate America, according to this movie, is to step on somebody else, which, you know, just embodies the whole theme of the movie.
Well, okay, here's a question. Excluding both of our current jobs, because we love our current jobs, you ever been to a board meeting like that? Because I certainly have. Granted, I was at a minor level, like a junior chipmunk supervisor, and everybody else was like a department head. But it felt like that very same thing. Like everybody had a persona they were bringing with them, because the boss was actually not elderly, but he was definitely a white guy, son of the elderly guy who owned the whole show. And you told him what he wanted to hear.
Yeah, I haven't been in that exact situation. I mean, I have had direct supervisors who I've had to manage. I'm not sure how to put this delicately. I'll just say they were not well equipped to handle anything they viewed as conflict. So if you ever wanted to suggest a different way of doing something, you had to be really creative about how you presented it.
Yeah, I think there definitely are those types of people.
Yeah. So I'd never been in a situation quite like the one depicted in this movie.
Oh, yeah. No. I mean, yeah, this definitely is the comic book version of the worst corporate greed kind of thing. It's just darn fun. It's got the right level of, it's got some world building. Although, again, in 1987, this seemed like, corporate America taking over everything seemed like the worst possible situation. And now it's just kind of a fact of life, although it's not nearly as sinister, we hope. And, you know, the Detroit being a complete shit storm, whatever you want to call it, Detroit itself. Downtown Detroit being a wasteland is pretty much for real. All the $1 million and multi-million dollar homes right outside of Detroit may be great, but Detroit itself has a serious problem. They're selling shit in their museum to make money, to pay people. And so that doesn't seem too super science fiction. And the militarized police doesn't seem super science fiction. And I love the 80s, like, coked out bad guys.
They were great. And Ray Wise, he was amazing as a henchman.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And again, I love Paul McCrane, the Emil character. He's just great and unhinged.
I remember after we watched this movie, I annoyed Brother Jay almost to death, my death, because he was bigger than me, by just walking around going, "Oh, I like it," like any chance I got.
Yes. Yes.
And I think he got fed up with me one day and exerted some physical dominance, as an older brother is wont to do sometimes.
He could not realize, he did not have the passion to know that you could have bought that for a dollar.
Yeah, I didn't even know what that meant. Some other fun things about this movie. The henchman who one of his weapons was his dangling junk. Which is how he distracted Officer Lewis, got the drop on her. His character's name was actually Joe Cox.
Well, there was not a lot. There were some not very subtle jokes, like the vehicle was the 6000 SUX.
Yes.
Which actually, you know, it makes me want to watch Idiocracy again. That needs to be on the calendar when we all talk about stuff together.
I love the first 50 minutes of that movie.
Yeah, I remember not liking the movie because it was just a lot of dick and fart jokes. But the more I thought about the movie, the more I think about it now, and the more I see things like, the presidential campaign of Donald Trump. It's like, oh shit, this was supposed to be a joke. It wasn't supposed to be, prophecy, like that's the word you used earlier.
Right.
But we are moments away from having, President Donald Macho Camacho Trump.
No, he's plummeting in the polls as we speak.
We'll see. I heard an interesting conversation where the reason he's kind of taken on the racist and non-PC route is because he really can't pull off the religious route. Because he's not religious at all, but to get the South, you gotta get something that works.
And so if you're not going to be religious, you got to be racist if you want to get the South.
Yeah, racist or xenophobic or pick three. Anyway, it's just interesting. We'll see who's going to replace him. Who's the next candidate that's going to be the adult in the room? Ted Cruz. It's a little scary.
Don't count out Jeb Bush.
Oh, I feel bad for him. I mean, hopefully he has enough money to last, but he seems like an adult in the room, but he does not seem like a very, like, he doesn't have his brother's aw shucks warmth about him. Donald Trump makes me appreciate George W. Bush.
He was great in debates.
he could pull off what Rick Perry couldn't, He could pull off the oops. Yeah. Aw, shucks. That's of course, Bill Clinton could do that too.
You want some wood?
Hold on. Is that a quote from the movie?
No, that's from the, I think it was during his first campaign, a debate with Gore, like one of the town hall style debates, where they're kind of walking around and talking to the audience. And Gore accused him of being industrialist who's out to to make a buck and harm the environment, as evidenced by his timber business. And W just like laughed it off. I was like, I have never been involved in the timber business. And then before his next question, he was just kind of chuckling to himself, and he went to one of the audience members like, you want some wood? And it was very funny.
Yeah. Well, again, remember those quaint days before Total War, back when it was a kinder, gentler time, when we pretended to care about the environment. Congress pretended to talk to each other. It was great.
we all refused to believe that the Supreme Court could decide who the president was going to be.
Oh, exactly. So many things we believed in back then.
Yeah. But one thing I did want to mention about RoboCop.
Yes.
You may not be able to tell by how quickly we're getting through the movie, but the pacing at RoboCop was great. I mean, it started out quickly. The middle was super fast, and it didn't take a breath before the climax and end. It was all great, and they knew the right time, the right moments to spend some time in a scene, and then they knew the perfect time to use shorthand. And the two scenes that I'm thinking about when I say that is when they're actually creating RoboCop from Murphy's almost or maybe fully dead body. It's almost like a Rocky training montage, except it's all like first person from RoboCop's point of view as they're getting him online and taking him back offline. And it's just little snippets of hearing the doctors and the scientists talk about what progress they've made. And it's done really quickly. And it's actually really chilling because it puts you in the shoes of Murphy as he's getting turned into this machine. So it accomplishes a lot in a short amount of time. And does it very effectively. And then if you contrast that at the end of the movie, after his first failed attempt on his hero's journey to get the main villain, and he's kind of licking his wounds, and it's the scene where he takes off his helmet for the first time, so you sort of see the monstrosity that he's become. That's the movie slowed way down for that section and really spent some time, and it was just the perfect time to do it, the perfect scene to do it in, because that's when you're really soaking in everything that this person has been through, and he is back to being a person now as he's recovering some of his Murphy identity. And it's really sad when he gets a glimpse of himself in the mirror for the first time with his visor off. You can sort of see his face stretched out over this robot skull, and is just this really small line where his partner tries to talk to him, and he just blows her off and is like, leave me alone. And it's really sad and haunting. But that was just the perfect time to slow the movie down and let you take your breath before the final shootout.
Yeah, and it doesn't last for very long. But you're right. It gives you that chance to breathe and to appreciate your character. Because Murphy, when Murphy becomes, you know, you don't really get a lot of time with Murphy. A little bit. You get enough to like Murphy before he turns into RoboCop, but not a ton of time.
Do you think Murphy's really supposed to be that likable?
Well, maybe not. I mean, he's supposed to be, you know, hey, he's a cop, so he's not perfect. there's a nice there's a nice chemistry between Murphy and Lewis, you know, Nancy Allen and Peter Weller. And, you know, again, Peter Weller is funny because, I don't think he gets a ton of credit because most of his acting is like in a very, like the suit is uncomfortable. Like he couldn't actually fit into a car. They had to, when they shot the scenes of him actually driving, they had to kind of do a workaround because he couldn't actually, you never see him get into the car. He is either just kind of getting in and then all of a sudden he's in there, or he's getting out of it, but you don't see him actually like get from the seat because the costume wouldn't let him. And he's acting very, I don't know, for lack of a better word, robotic. And he's, you know, sort of unfeeling. So, you know, you can see where, okay, this is, you know, there's Murphy in there somewhere, but you don't really get it. But yeah, that point where it slows down and he becomes a human again, makes you feel for him.
Yeah, and I don't know if it's an urban legend or if it's true, but I do remember hearing that they were thinking about casting a bunch of different other actors for the lead role, but they finally landed on Peter Weller because he's a pretty small guy and super skinny, so he could fit in the suit.
Oh, that makes sense. And he's got a good voice, so, you know, that works out. And again, it's comic book acting, so you don't have to be, you know, a Shakespearean actor. But yeah, I mean, again, I think it's pretty good. And like, Kurtwood Smith is just great. And actually, everybody is. You know, Ronnie Cox as the bad guy is great. Even the old man is pretty fun. And yeah, the stunts and the action scenes are just comic booky enough to kind of go along with the theme, but still pretty brutal. Like, you know, at the end, when Emil drives the truck, the van or whatever, into the toxic waste, it's a big tank that says toxic waste on, like the 1965 Batman or whatever. Yet it's got like total toxic Avenger level effects in there. It's gross.
It washes over him after he crashes into it, and he turns into this horrible monstrosity as his skin is kind of melting away and forming inhuman looking appendages.
Oh yeah, it's fun.
And then for some reason, when he's hit by a car driven by one of his cohorts, he just explodes like a water balloon.
Yes. Which is always kind of a good effect. Now that we've seen lots of zombie movies, we see how that kind of can be used for good or ill. But yeah, I mean, I have nothing but good things to say about this movie. Now, have you seen the remake?
I have not.
See, I have not either. And I read part of a review at one point, or I heard something, or heard it about one of the comedy film nerds or something talked about how right from the very beginning, I think they change it. Instead of getting shot very specifically with a shotgun, he just gets kind of blown up. And already you're creating a different thing. And Verhoeven has always said he would definitely consider doing a remake, or not a remake, but a sequel to RoboCop, because he wasn't involved in any of the actual sequels.
Yeah, most of what really works about this movie is so specific to the time and place of when it was made. You know, the satire and the social commentary from, you know, the mid to late 80s is really, I think, what gives it its soul. So I don't have any interest in a remake, because I have no, and maybe I'm wrong, but I have no confidence that they would actually capture any of that. I would anticipate that they would just capitalize on a known property to make a straightforward action movie. And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they did incorporate some of those elements into the remake, but, you know, just why do it?
And okay, so this echoes, I don't know if you've, I know I've talked about the podcast, The Canon, and they did an episode of The Canon that was discussing whether or not the movie Goonies should be part of the canon. And it was it was Devin Faraci, and I can't remember what the other reviewer is part of the main podcast, a guy and a girl, both film reviewers. But they had a guest, and it was a live thing. So they had a guest, and it was Elijah Wood. And Elijah Wood picked the movie, and they were doing it at this video store called Vidiot. So they had to pick a movie from like 85, because that was when Vidiot's opened. And so they picked, there were so many movies to choose from, but he picked Goonies because he thought it was like a sure thing. But turns out both of the actual film critics hate the movie Goonies for different reasons. And by the end, I think they pretty much convinced Elijah Wood that it was not a good movie. But one of the...
Oh, that's sad.
Well, it's definitely worth listening to, the whole conversation, because it is funny. And he's actually he's a pretty funny guy. Which, by the way, I have to note to myself to remember another thing to say about. But one of the things they were talking about is, okay, so Steven Spielberg made all these movies that were like about kids, but also kind of serial movies. Like he sort of took his nostalgia for the serials that he watched when he was growing up, and turn them into things like Indiana Jones. And they discussed about how today's kids, like in those days, when you saw something like that that you really liked, you had the memory of that. Like Quentin Tarantino talks about how the movies he liked when he was growing up, he had to get the soundtracks so he could remember the movies themselves based on the music that was in the soundtrack. Because you don't, you know, now you can go on YouTube or buy the DVD or, you know, even again, video stores where if you want to, you know, if you're nostalgic for the Goonies, you can just pop the movie Goonies into your player and watch it. You don't have to make it up in your head or remember it fondly. So it's interesting that nostalgia has kind of changed because now it's 24 hours nostalgia forever.
That's heavy, man.
Well, again, so if you really like RoboCop, would you make a movie in the style of RoboCop that you remembered, which would be idealistic? You'd make, you know, the idealized RoboCop, or would you actually be watching the movie and then trying to do something that's more of a, I don't know, like a pastiche, if that's the right word or not. But yeah, it's, I don't know. So it was a heavy thought to think about too. The other thing I was going to mention, by the way of tangenting around, is, do you ever watch the show At Midnight?
No.
Are you familiar with it?
I'm aware of its existence.
It's like a,
that's about all.
It's like a 30-minute kind of game show sort of thing where it's comedians or actors that are the contestants and they're supposed to riff on the internet sort of news or memes of the day. And so they play sort of little funny games like they'll say, you know, change the title of a movie to make it Christmassy or something, or, you know, ruin a classic. And there'll be stuff that obviously the people, the contestants, who are people like Doug Benson or Matt Myra or whatever, Jen Kirkman or something, there'll be some of them that they'll actually think up, you know, just improvise. And there'll be some that are actually written. Like they have a team of writers. So you have the option of using the written ones or coming up with your own. And so, you know, there's some funny stuff in there, but, and I can't remember if it must've been because of a movie, but one of the contestants was Michael Shannon. And
oh, wow.
I was watching it while I was actually sick in bed. So I had it on, but I wasn't like facing the TV. I was sort of, you know, like kind of dozing off as I was listening to it. And I didn't have headphones on because I was at home alone. And normally I have headphones on at home all the time. So I can dissociate whenever I want. But enough about me. And there are two things that struck me. A, he seems to be kind of fun and a funny, bright guy, which is always nice. He doesn't seem like he was trying over much, which is sometimes what happens, but he also has a very specific Southern accent that I couldn't quite place.
You've been part of a Red Orchid Theater since the very beginning, right?
Yes. Since, the inception. We're 20 years old. So, we started in 1993 and, I was there for the first show. I did the box office and made the program and the poster and all that.
Now, where do you live? New York?
I live in New York, but I've spent a lot of time in Chicago over the years.
Okay.
But I moved to New York about 7 years ago.
Yeah. Awesome.
What is it about Chicago that keeps bringing you back as an actor?
Well, I think the quality of the productions here is so high because people really do it here just for the art's sake of it, mm-hmm. You know. New York is a very fierce market. It's very brutal and it's very expensive to work there. And here you can have a small theater that's not too expensive. And, you know, nobody's getting rich. They're just doing it because they love the
that's
work.
Right.
He sounds like his normal speaking voice has a certain accent to it that, again, I wish I could have come up with, oh, that's where I know that accent from. I'm not sure where he's from, but it's great. It's sort of a Midwest or Midwest Southern kind of thing.
He's from Lexington, Kentucky.
Oh, well, then that must be it. I don't know. Who else is from Kentucky?
Raylan Givens.
Okay, who's Raylan Givens?
The main character in Justified.
Yeah, see, so I have no idea. But anyway, it's funny because it turns out it wasn't an accent I was expecting. So it was just funny to hear him talk. That's all. It was a perfectly acceptable episode. But again, it's silly jokes. So it's, you know, it goes by fast and it's only half an hour long. So it's great. And I never even, you know, there's kind of the end where it turns from 3 to 2 and they have this kind of longer form joke that they do over the break, the last commercial break. But I almost never watch that far because I'm just in it for the quick one liners or commenting about silly pictures on the internet. It's a show I can get through in 9 minutes if I want.
Well, I'll have to check it out one day.
Oh, not necessarily. Probably you can YouTube Michael Shannon at midnight and you'll see his whole episode because we do live in good times for that.
Yes, we do.
Anyway, so anything else on RoboCop?
No, I feel like we maybe haven't given it its just due with all our digressions and tangents. But yeah, if you haven't seen RoboCop, the original, you should see it, especially if you're of a certain age where you can kind of remember the late mid 80s, because it's not the movie I remembered it being. It's actually way better.
And it's also, much like Jason and I talk about Gremlins, it's more violent than I expected it to be, than I remembered it being, because there were weird, violent things going on in movies around that time. That was a whole PG-13 kind of time. So I wouldn't play it for, I don't know, a 6-year-old, that's for sure.
Probably not a 10-year-old either.
Yeah, probably not. I don't know. It seems like movie fans always watch movies too early. Or maybe that's just an idea. I hear a lot of podcasts about movies.
It works.
Yeah. So anyway.
But yeah, it was way more violent than I remembered.
Yeah. Yeah. But again, it wasn't full of like filler like The Last Boy Scout was. So I appreciated that too. And I don't know, how versed are you on Bond movies?
If it's before Pierce Brosnan, I'm not at all.
Ah, okay, good. Because I'm not really very much either. Bond has never been my favorite character anyway. But, and the Roger Moore movies were campy to the point of being like a turnoff sometimes. But since you will soon be going through the whole journey with us of all the Bond movies. Like every 6 week, we'll pick up another Bond movie. And we did the second one, From Russia with Love, which I had never seen before. And let me tell you, From Russia with Love plus RoboCop was a good twofer this week. Like, unlike last week where I was pretty dissatisfied with The Last Boy Scout, I was super happy about both movies this week.
Excellent. Good news.
Yeah. And Jason is not even one of his favorites. It's one of the lesser Bond films as far as he was concerned. He's the Bond aficionado. But I was just enjoying it for all of its goodness. I could see why it was popular. Because it took the things that worked from the first one and made it an even more rich environment.
Let's play this fun game.
Okay.
Wasn't there a movie with Sean Connery that had Russia in the title, which may or may not have been about an author, like a novelist, and also starred Michelle Pfeiffer?
Oh, okay. Michelle Pfeiffer. Because I can think of the really bad Sean Connery movie Entrapment with Catherine Zeta-Jones. But that was about it, like a burglar kind of person. A Russian author with Michelle Pfeiffer. A Russian author. Can I cheat? So he plays a Russian author? Or she plays a Russian author?
I don't remember. I think I was like 6.
Okay. Let me see. Sean Connery, age 85, born in Edinburgh, Scotland, was a former bodybuilder, which you can really see in the old Bond ones. Okay, Russian author. Oh, how about The Russia House? Sean Connery, Michelle Pfeiffer, The Russia House. Directed by Fred Schapizzi. Written by Jean Le Carré. John Le Carré.
His friends call him Jean.
Yeah, oh, thank you. Also starring Roy Scheider, John Mahoney, J.T. Walsh. Klaus Maria Brandauer.
Right on. I remember nothing about this movie. It's going on the calendar.
Yeah. I remember nothing. I don't know if I've even seen it before.
It'd be a fun one. We'll make Jason watch it too.
Yeah.
So January 7th.
Sure. Throw it in the calendar. there's a lot of questionable Sean Connery movies out there. I also want to put a movie in the calendar. It's called P.S. Your Cat is Dead.
That sounds unpleasant.
It's a Steve Guttenberg movie. You know, comedy. Screwball comedy, maybe.
Oh, that was another thing that I enjoyed hearing Jason talk about and during the Planes, Trains, and Automobiles podcast was mentioning the movie Neighbors. I remember as a little kid, that was one of those first movies that we had a copy of in our house. So it got played a lot, and that movie actually really scared me.
I haven't seen that movie since then.
I haven't either, because it really freaked me out.
Really? Okay. I wonder if it's even available. There's 2014's Neighbors. There's 1981's Neighbors. Interesting. Yeah, we got to put that on the calendar for sometime in, I don't know, July. It's hard, though, because sometimes, like, it turns out I'm not a big fan of Dan Aykroyd. I'm not even sure I'm a fan of John Belushi, although it has Tim Kazurinsky, so I'm in.
There you go.
And I'm sure I'll remember it, because I'm sure I saw it, you know, as many times as you did. I also remember, like, I remember watching Young Doctors in Love quite a bit, and I also, which of course makes me a Taylor and Negron fan, and also, what was that Dan Aykroyd movie, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, he has sex with a sheep, that's all I remember.
Well, it sounds amazing.
Yeah, I'm sure. It's great. Send your feedback to show@notinthecreepyway.com or call us on a new voicemail account to leave voice messages. Or you can text us at this account to leave text messages. The number is 425-243-9169. That's 425-243-9169. What are you waiting for? Put it in your phone right now, and then when you listen to an episode, you can just hit your contacts. Dial it already.